This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018. Coming up this hour.
The worst day of Donald Trump's presidency sees Paul Manafort convicted and Michael Cohen plead guilty.
While legal risks threaten his presidency, Mr. Trump responds with a familiar refrain.
U.S. futures fall while stocks in Europe and Asia largely shrug off the news.
Reaction from lawmakers on the Cohen guilty plea and the Manafort conviction. I'm John Tucker. I'll have that story straight ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Coming up in sports, the Yankees win in extra innings, but they're losing on the injury front, and the Mets double up the Giants.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
U.S. futures are lower as traders gauge the fallout from the legal drama engulfing President Trump. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 6 points, Dow futures down 52, NASDAQ futures down 11, the DAX in Germany's up a third of a percent. The CAC in Paris up 0.2%. The FTSE 100, little change. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.6%. So did the Hang Seng in Hong Kong. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 2.83%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.60%. Bob.
President Trump has now seen his former campaign manager convicted and his former lawyer plead guilty. Deputy U.S. Attorney Robert Kazami says Michael Cohen admitted to making hush money payments to an adult film actress and a former Playboy model.
What he did was he worked to pay money to silence two women who had information that he believed would be detrimental to the 2016 campaign and to the candidate and the campaign.
That candidate, Donald Trump, although Kazami did not use the president's name.
Cohen's attorney, Lanny Davis, was more direct, saying in a statement, Cohen testified that Donald Trump directed him to commit a crime. And as Bloomberg senior editor Jody Schneider reports, Davis says Cohen is ready to cooperate with Robert Mueller's Russia probe.
His client is happy to tell the counsel, meaning Mr. Mueller, what he knows, and he has knowledge on certain subjects that should be of interest. So it looks like Mr. Cohen is willing to cooperate with the Mueller investigation.
Mr. Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, said in a statement that Cohen's plea deal has no relation to the president.
At the same time, Cohen was entering a guilty plea. A jury in Alexandria, Virginia, convicted former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort on 8 counts of tax and bank fraud charges. And President Trump was quick to respond. Martin DeCaro reports from the Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
After landing in West Virginia for a campaign rally, the president addressed the verdicts against Paul Manafort in the same terms he uses on Twitter to discredit the special counsel's investigation.
This started as Russian collusion. This is absolutely nothing to do. This is a witch hunt and it's a disgrace. But this has nothing to do with what they started out looking for Russians involved in our campaign. There were none.
Although the judge declared a mistrial on 10 counts, the 8 guilty verdicts were seen as a major victory for Robert Mueller's team. In Washington, Martin DeCaro, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Martin, thank you. What's notable there, though, may be what the president didn't say. A Bloomberg Television and Radio Chief Washington Correspondent Kevin Cirilli.
He, of course, made no mention of Michael Cohen in his public remarks. Instead, he opted to defend Paul Manafort, to say that there was no evidence of Russian collusion, and to not comment on Michael Cohen.
Sources tell Bloomberg President Trump watched Fox News coverage of the Manafort verdict and Cohen plea aboard Air Force One last night. They described the president as somber but calm.
The political and legal peril from these developments is increasingly threatening Mr. Trump's presidency. Jens David Olin is vice dean and professor at Cornell Law School and an expert on criminal law.
This is a disaster for President Trump. You know, this now places him really at the center of a criminal endeavor. Remember, we also have audio tapes from Cohen that were provided to the federal prosecutors. And if you combine those audio recordings now with the possibility of testimony from Cohen about what's in those audio tapes and about about his interactions with Donald Trump. I think Trump is facing not only a campaign finance violation, but he's also facing a federal conspiracy charge because he was involved in this endeavor with Mr. Cohen. And if Trump was anyone other than a sitting president, I think he would already have been indicted by now.
Cohen's guilty plea is part of a second investigation entirely separate from Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia probe.
U.S. futures turned lower after Cohen's plea and Manafort's conviction yesterday, but equities in Europe are mixed and appear to be largely shrugging off the news. Stocks in Asia did the same today, rising for the fourth straight session. Bloomberg's Juliet Sali has details from Singapore.
A rebound in Japanese shares lifted the regional index, with the Nikkei 225 gaining 0.6% in Tokyo. Hong Kong's Hang Seng index climbed for a fourth day as Tencent shares gained. However, markets in Shanghai and Shenzhen retreated after a two-day rebound ahead of low-level US-China trade talks. Markets were closed in India, Indonesia, Malaysia, and here in Singapore for public holidays. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Juliet. Low-level trade talks between the U.S. and China get underway today. Meantime, sources tell Bloomberg the U.S. and Mexico have moved closer toward a consensus on NAFTA. There's progress on rules for cars, but still no broader agreement to reshape the trade agreement.
At 2 p.m. Wall Street time, the Federal Reserve issues minutes from its latest meeting, with investors looking for clues on future policy moves. Bloomberg's Matt Bosler has more.
Once they get to the so-called neutral level of interest rates, which they're on track to hit next year, what do? Do they take a pause, or do they keep going to ward off inflation? President Trump has criticized the Fed for its plan to continue raising rates, but the minutes probably won't reference that. However, they may give a clue about how the Fed is thinking about the interest rate path next year. The other big question is what they're going to do with their $4.2 trillion balance sheet. They've started to shrink it, but they've said they don't know how far they're going to go. Matt Bosler, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Matt, thank you. And futures this morning are falling, with S&P futures down 5 points, Dow futures down 48, NASDAQ futures down 9.5. The euro this morning at $1.1575, little changed against the dollar. The yen is at 110.38. NYMEX crude oil on the rise, up 0.9%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. Now 5:07 on Wall Street. More on reaction to the legal morass facing the president. Here's Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning.
And good morning, Bob. Democrats are seizing on the news of Michael Cohen's guilty plea and Paul Manafort's conviction to attack the president. Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut said in a statement, "The White House looks increasingly like a criminal enterprise," with a conviction of President Trump's former campaign manager and personal lawyer. Senate Democrats also weighing in over the possibility of Mr. Trump pardoning his former campaign manager, Paul Manafort. Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy was asked about it in Washington.
The president could, but I think that would create such a backlash. I mean, that would have Watergate written all over it.
John Dean, the former White House counsel for Richard Nixon, said of the developments, "I think we've established that we have a criminal president, and that is historic." Steve Bannon, Trump's former chief strategist, said the developments clarify that November is a referendum on impeachment, an up or down vote, and every Trump supporter, in his words, needs to get with the program. A grand jury in California has indicted Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter and his wife on corruption charges. Prosecutors say they used campaign funds to finance family trips and other expenses. Hunter was one of Donald Trump's earliest congressional endorsements. Hunter's father, who held the seat before his son, had this to say about the indictment.
It's politically motivated by hardcore Democrats who want to get Duncan Hunter out of Congress.
The House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi is calling for Hunter to step down. Lane is now a Category 5 hurricane with winds of 157 miles per hour and is moving toward Hawaii. Hawaii residents rushed to stores to stock up on bottled water and other supplies.
We got, of course, the lanterns, the batteries and all that good stuff, candles just in case, gas for the generator, and lots of prayer, I guess, yeah.
The storm had been moving west, but is now expected to turn northwest toward the state. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok. On Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Bob.
John, thank you. Now 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And good morning to you, Rob Bushkub.
Good morning, Bob. The Yankees' wins keep adding up. Unfortunately, so do the injuries, as New York outlasted the Marlins 2-1 in 12 innings in South Florida on a sac fly from Miguel Andujar. Aroldis Chapman, however, came in to close out the 12th, only to exit after six pitches, only one strike thrown because of knee discomfort. Skipper Aaron Boone.
Chappie, it was his knee again that did not feel right. So same spot as he's felt before. So just got him out of there. And so we'll get all the testing and stuff done tomorrow just to see what exactly. But, you know, usually, you know, it's not really an issue for us. But for him to call us out there, you know, obviously we needed to get him out of there.
Eight pitchers in all used by New York, who closed to within eight games of the Red Sox, who've now lost three straight. They were beaten at home again by their former manager, Terry Francona, and his Cleveland Indians. Series continues tonight from Miami as Lance Lynn battles Trevor Richards. The Mets doubled up the Giants late at Citi Field, 6-3. Good to see Michael Conforto back in left.
Now here's Conforto. First pitch by Watson, driven in the air to deep left field. Back goes Pence. This might go, and it's off the base of the wall. In play. McNeil is in. Flores around third. He's coming home. They're going to call it a home run. They're going to call it a home run now for Michael Conforto.
Mets radio on the call. That blew the game open in the eighth inning. Have a day offensively, Jeff McNeil. The rookie went 4-for-4, scoring twice and knocking in a run. Noah Syndergaard on the bump tonight for the Mets. And former Giants wide receiver Victor Cruz calls it a career. He'll still work, though, as a TV analyst. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob?
Rob Bushka, thank you very much. NFL officials reportedly plan to discuss the league's new helmet rule in the coming days after an uproar among some players and fans. That's according to the Washington Post, which says if any changes are made, they would be just minor modifications. The rule currently levies a 15-yard penalty for players who lower their head and use their helmet to hit an opponent. Coming up throughout the morning on Bloomberg, we will check into the president's legal morass with Wendy Schiller, Brown University political science professor, Kevin Cirilli, Bloomberg television and radio chief Washington correspondent, and Kathleen Hunter, Bloomberg Washington reporter. This is Daybreak. Brought to you by National Realty, developers of Prime New York, Hoboken, Philadelphia, and Delray Beach Real Estate. Up to 20% return properties. See them at NRIA.net.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are falling this morning, while stocks in Europe and Asia are mixed as traders try to gauge the fallout from the latest legal drama engulfing Donald Trump's presidency. The dollar is advancing while Treasury is steady. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down about 6 points. Dow futures down 52. NASDAQ futures down 10. The DAX in Germany is little change. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 2.82%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.59%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.9% or 56 cents at $66.40 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.4%, up $4.30 to $12.04.30 an ounce. The euro, $1.1593, and the yen, 110.29. Today we are watching for reports on existing home sales at a 10 o'clock Wall Street time, while at 2, the Federal Reserve releases minutes from its latest meeting. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, John.
And good morning to you, Karen. President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to illegal campaign finance charges over hush money paid to a porn actress and a former Playboy model, all but naming President Trump as having ordered him to do it. At almost the same time, the president's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was convicted on 8 counts of tax and bank fraud charges, boosting special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut said in a statement, "The White House looks increasingly like a criminal enterprise." Bloomberg Sports, Yankees beat Miami in extra innings. The Mets toppled the Giants. Red Sox lost to Cleveland, the Nationals fell to Philadelphia, and the O's lost to Toronto. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Bob.
John, thanks. It is now 5:19 on Wall Street, and lots to talk about this morning, starting with what the markets aren't doing. William Hobbs is head of investment strategy for Barclays. Good morning and welcome. So Manafort is convicted. Cohen pleads guilty. The president denies any connection. Many legal experts say Mr. Trump is in legal jeopardy, though, and yet the markets don't seem to be concerned. Why no big reaction, do you think?
Morning, Bob. Thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, I guess the first is a disclaimer. I'm not a lawyer or a political strategist, but I think the and that sort of limits what I can say about these things. But I think there are a couple of interesting points that we can make along this. The first, I think, is that obviously even with a disastrous midterm, the prospects for an impeachment still look quite far out. The Senate supermajority that you would need alongside that House simple majority, that still looks like quite a remote possibility. The second point, it's a broader point about sort of, you know, the effect of this administration on the economy. We want to be wary of how much of the kind of, you know, very evident, robust underlying economic health that we see in the U.S. we attribute to the actions of the U.S. administration. The reality for us is that this this administration came into a very helpful tailwind from the global economy. If you look when PMI started turning around, it was in the middle of 2016, and you found that actually you found a brisk pickup in investment around the world, and that's really what the administration came into. That turnaround in corporate profits was already in motion. Now, on top of that, they obviously put on a large amount of kind of fiscal steroids. You've seen this tax bill. But unless that changes the trend in economic growth, and which we're very reluctant to believe in, that suggests that actually the effects of this administration on both the stock market and the economy in terms of the trend have actually probably been a little bit less than has been advertised. And that also suggests that if this administration runs into troubles and can't do as much as it previously promised, then that also should be sort of discounted a little bit with regards to its effect on the stock market.
So we move on. And low-level trade talks between the U.S. and China getting underway today. We've got word that the U.S. and Mexico have moved closer toward a consensus on NAFTA. Does this trade optimism help put a floor under the markets?
A little bit, yeah. Certainly it's been one of the things. And I think, you know, when you look at the area of trade and you look at sort of, you know, the political, the potential for sort of political influence in this area, this is an area where the constitutional restraints on the White House are at the loosest, if you think about it. So if the president did want to carry out sort of his most protectionist thoughts on in this area, he could, using various sort of acts and statutes. So the fact that you're seeing tensions dissipate a little bit is good news. Now, our hunch has long been that as the sort of midterm campaign trail approaches, you should see some of those tensions cool a little bit. I think, you know, the administration is looking for stuff to wave to the electorate, you know, some wins to wave to the electorate. And that looks like that's starting to be the case in some of the areas, at least, you know, how sort of fundamental those changes are. That's open to some debate. But yeah, it's good news if a NAFTA agreement is closer.
So I take it then that if the markets have been optimistic about getting past these trade problems, that wasn't misplaced.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, it does seem to be a fairly common consensus, doesn't it? I don't think we're alone in thinking that the midterm campaign trail acts as a kind of restraining influence on the U.S. administration. And that has certainly tempered the sort of, you know, the influence of the kind of rhetoric on the actual stock market. You have seen some weakness in EM in the EM space, for sure. There's other reasons behind that as well. But yes, that seems to be that markets have taken more or less the right call on this. So that probably limits the extent of the rally you get if you do get a better result out of these trade talks than had previously been argued.
We are nearing one of the longest bull markets ever. How long can it last?
For as long as the economy goes up, I think probably, Bob. We want to be sort of, you know, a little bit humble about being able to call the next recession. You know, a lot of recessions come out of the blue. You know, recessions can range from clear blue skies, but none of the indicators that we place some value in are currently flashing amber. You know, the yield curve, the ISM manufacturing, all those kind of things are still telling us that the economy is still good to go. That suggests that corporate earnings growth will continue. Now we're on the lookout, obviously, but there aren't the sort of, you know, the conspicuous signs of age that you get, you know, with, you know, kind of the economic hubris that tends to characterize or precede the worst kind of recessions. That's so far substantially absent. So, you know, it can go on for a bit longer yet. There's no doubt about it.
So overall, then, are you optimistic that it's smooth sailing from here on out?
I think smooth sailing would be overstating it, Bob, but we're certainly positioned for more stock market rises. We're, you know, within a diversified portfolio context, we still lean towards both developed and emerging equities. Within emerging, it's Asia. Within developed, it's still U.S. stocks and European stocks that look to be the best place to place your bets. But with that, obviously, we've been beefing up defenses within the portfolio just because, you know, there are some risks out there. There always are, and always the unknowns that you've got to try and protect against, I guess.
William Hobbs is head of investment strategy for Barclays. Thanks very much for your insights this morning. S&P futures currently down 6 points. That is almost 0.25%. 10-year Treasury prices up to 30 seconds. The yield at 2.8207%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And stay with us here on Bloomberg Daybreak. Later in the hour, we're set to talk to Brown University political science professor Wendy Schiller on where the president stands politically. This is Bloomberg Radio.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Good morning to you. It is 5:30 on Wall Street. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are lower this morning, and stocks in Europe and Asia are mixed as traders gauge the fallout from the latest legal drama engulfing Donald Trump's presidency. Mr. Trump's former lawyer implicated him in a crime at the same time his former campaign chairman became a convicted felon. We'll have more on these developments coming up in just a moment.
But first, investors await minutes from the Federal Reserve's latest policy meeting. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
Bloomberg Economics says the minutes could reinforce the notion that Fed officials are leaning toward a fourth rate hike in 2018. So far, the Fed has tightened twice this year, and a third rate hike seems to be in the bag, perhaps at next month's policy meeting. This week's Fed conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, could shed more light on the matter. Fed Chair Jerome Powell will speak. Also on today's economic calendar, data on existing home sales. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. PIMCO sees a 70% chance the global economy enters a recession over the next 5 years. The firm says the downturn could come as soon as 3 years from now as ultra-loose monetary policy comes to a halt.
On the trade front, low-level talks between the U.S. and China get underway today. Meantime, sources tell Bloomberg the U.S. and Mexico have moved closer toward a consensus on NAFTA.
In corporate news, Linda says getting a merger with Praxair past U.S. regulators will mean divesting more assets than planned, potentially putting the $45 billion deal in jeopardy.
Xiaomi is out with its first financial results since going public. The Chinese smartphone maker delivered a 68% jump in quarterly sales with net income of $2.1 billion.
And Target leads seven companies in the S&P 500 reporting earnings today. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
A combination of delayed buying of warm weather merchandise and early back-to-school shopping likely helped the chain's second quarter numbers. Target has been remodeling stores and introducing private label brands. And Bloomberg Intelligence says we can't forget that Target rolled out some big promotions to compete with Amazon's Prime Day. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Jeff, thank you. S&P futures are down 7 points this morning. Dow futures down 62. NASDAQ futures down 15, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. DAX in Germany is down about a tenth of a percent now. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 2.82%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.59%. NYMEX crude oil up 1% or 66 cents to $66.51 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.3% or $3.30. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. Now 5:33 on Wall Street. More on the fallout from yesterday's legal developments. With us this morning, Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning.
And good morning, Bob. President Trump suffered through perhaps the worst day of his presidency Tuesday as his personal lawyer implicated him in a crime. At almost the same moment, his former campaign chairman became a convicted felon. We began with Michael Cohen. The president's former personal lawyer pleaded guilty to 8 felonies, admitting he broke campaign finance laws to influence the 2016 election. Details in this report from Bloomberg's Martin DeCaro.
Michael Cohen admitted he paid women to keep them quiet about alleged affairs at the direction of an unnamed candidate.
He worked to pay money to silence two women who had information that he believed would be detrimental to the 2016 campaign.
Federal prosecutor Robert Kuzami didn't mention candidate Donald Trump by name. He did say Cohen has learned a harsh lesson.
We are a nation of laws.
The president has denied the affairs and at first denied any payments were made. In Washington, Martin DeCaro, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Moments after the charges were read aloud in a Manhattan courtroom, the president's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was convicted on 8 counts of tax and bank fraud charges, boosting special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Bloomberg's Andrew Harris was in the courtroom in Alexandria, Virginia, where the jury returned the verdicts.
He was convicted on 5 counts of tax fraud, 1 count of failing to file a foreign bank account report, and 2 counts of bank fraud. There was little discernible reaction from Mr. Manafort or from his wife at the moment, but as Manafort was led out of the courtroom at the end of the proceedings, his expression could only be best described as stunned.
A president who won election in part by labeling his opponent, Hillary Clinton, a criminal complete with chance of lock her up at campaign rallies, has now seen 3 close associates brought down by federal prosecutors, including his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Democrats immediately seized on the news to attack the president as they looked ahead to the congressional elections in November, where they hope to win back at least 1 chamber of Congress. And a number of Republicans also said the developments marked a significant turning point for the president. Wyoming voters had picked Secretary of State Mark Gordon, a rancher who grew up at the foot of the Bighorn Mountains, over political mega-donor Foster Freeze in the state's Republican primary for governor. President Trump had endorsed Freeze on Twitter as voting got underway. Hawaii residents rushed to stores to pick up on bottled water and other supplies as they faced the threat of heavy rain, flash flooding, and high surf as a strengthening hurricane continues to churn toward the state. The National Weather Service announced that Hurricane Lane had become a Category 5 hurricane. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. And this is Bloomberg. Bob.
Thanks, John. 5:36 on Wall Street. Time now for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And good morning to you, Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Bob. The Yankees hold serve in the wild card and close the gap on the division.
Swung on. There it is, the deep left. Catching it is Ortega. Here comes Higgy. Here comes the throw. It is not in time. Higashioka scores. It is a sac fly and an RBI for Miguel Andujar.
Yankees radio 2-1 in 12 innings. They beat the Marlins on the road. But that's where the good news stopped as closer Aroldis Chapman left just 6 pitches in with knee discomfort. It's the same knee that's plagued his tendonitis all year, confirmed manager Aaron Boone. He'll have an MRI on Wednesday. However, the Yankees picked up a game on the Red Sox, who've now lost 3 straight. They still trail by 8 in the division. Tuesday also marked the return of Giancarlo Stanton to Miami, who received a standing ovation upon his first at-bat.
A lot of things go into this, a lot to where I'm at now. And like I said, I grew up over there. And, you know, it's the next part of my life to grow up. But, you know, that's always going to be a huge part of me. And, you know, it's just really special that they gave me that.
Stanton had 2 base hits in the win. Lance Lynn takes on Trevor Richards as the series continues. Mets pulled away from San Francisco 6-3 late at Citi Field. Jeff McNeil, the rookie, continues to impress. He went 4-for-4, scoring twice and adding an RBI. Michael Conforto went deep for the Mets, who will send Noah Syndergaard up against Casey Kelly for the Giants. And we all remember the salsa dancing of Giants wideout Victor Cruz. He's calling it a career, but staying in the game to work as a TV analyst. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob?
Rob Buschka, thank you very much. It is now 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on how Tyson is looking beyond meat to protein grown in labs. Also in this week's issue, how celebrity news site TMZ is pivoting to politics. Felix Gillette wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
You know, you have a former reality TV star who became president, and suddenly you see all of these bigger Hollywood stars who are thinking, hey, Donald Trump could do it. You know, maybe I should be thinking about politics.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now to access insights and analysis on the global stories that matter most. Now 5:38 on Wall Street. Time for your Tri-State Business Report and our check-in with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning.
Hi, Bob. Anbang Insurance is moving ahead with renovations to Manhattan's Waldorf Astoria. Amid expectations the embattled Chinese company will sell other U.S. hotels, the insurer, which began demolition work at the Waldorf last November, has signed a contract with Acom Tishman to cover the second phase of the project, according to a statement. Look out, Georgia. Here comes New Jersey. Farmers in New Jersey will harvest about 64 million pounds of peaches this year. That would be an 8 million pound increase from last year. American Agriculturalist says projections place New Jersey at number 3 in U.S. peach production for 2018. Rentschler Field is expanding its beer offerings for the UConn football season. It'll sell Two Roads Brewing Company and Sam Adams products. The offerings each have their own stands by Section 107 where they'll offer beer as well as food. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Bob?
Ed, thanks very much. Now 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio's on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on Verizon slowing down data speeds for fire departments after they hit their limit fighting fires.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Papa John's founder John Schnatter is taking his battle with the pizza chain to employees.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that United Continental is experimenting with lie-flat seats for some of its Boeing 737s.
I'm Joan Doniger telling KYW listeners in Philadelphia why Urban Outfitters is hot again.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting President Trump has repeated a threat to put a 25% tariff on every automobile imported into the U.S. from the EU.
Thank you all. Those are just some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. And stay with us here on Bloomberg Daybreak. Just ahead, we're set to talk to Brown University political science professor Wendy Schiller on where the president stands politically. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are falling while stocks in Europe and Asia were mixed as traders tried to gauge the fallout from the latest legal drama engulfing Donald Trump's presidency. Treasuries are holding steady while the euro advances after strong data on wages. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures are down 6 points, Dow futures down 55, NASDAQ futures down 11. The DAX in Germany is little changed. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 2.82%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.59%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.1% or 72 cents to $66.56 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.3% or $3.60 to $12.03.70 an ounce. The euro, $1.1589, the yen, 110.28. Today we're watching for reports on existing home sales at a 10 o'clock Wall Street time. At 2, the Federal Reserve releases minutes from its latest meeting. And we're watching today for earnings from companies including Target and home improvement retailer Lowe's. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And good morning, Karen. President Trump's former lawyer Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to illegal campaign finance charges over hush money paid to a porn actress and a former Playboy model, all but naming the president as having ordered him to do it. Moments after the charges were read in a Manhattan courtroom yesterday, the president's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was convicted on 8 counts of tax and bank fraud charges. President Trump largely ignored the criminal proceedings against the 2 one-time members of his inner circle during a rally Tuesday night in Charleston, West Virginia. Instead, he revisited favorite topics like tax cuts and his proposed Space Force to the cheers of supporters. The president said he feels badly for both men, but also asked, where's the collusion? And authorities say a man in the U.S. illegally has confessed to kidnapping a 20-year-old University of Iowa student, killing her and dumping her body in a cornfield. 24-year-old Christian Rivera is charged with first-degree murder in the death of Molly Tibbetts. And in Bloomberg Sports, the Yankees beat Miami. That game went to extra innings. The Mets topped the Giants. The Red Sox lost to Cleveland. The Nationals fell to Philadelphia. And the Orioles lost to Toronto. Global news 24 hours a day. On air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Bob.
John, thank you. Now 5:49 on Wall Street. By any measure, yesterday was not a good day for President Trump. The headlines range from the worst hour of Donald Trump's presidency to the president's worst day ever. We're going to get Brown University political science professor Wendy Schiller's take now. Good morning. Thanks for your insights today. So how bad was it, really?
Well, I mean, you know, the president's personal attorney pleading out, I mean, really not even going to trial, and then a person who ran the campaign at a pretty critical juncture for a couple of months, both of them, one being convicted, one pleading out, to basically essentially corruption charges and campaign finance violations. You know, that just says it adds to the impression that Trump runs essentially a corrupt enterprise, either in his private dealings or in his public dealings. Now, does it hurt the president directly as president? That is much less clear to me because he wasn't president when these things happened. So when you think about impeachment and, of course, now ramping up the calls for impeachment, et cetera, you can argue there's sort of a general sort of corrupt enterprise that he's brought to the White House. But so far, I don't see anything that says, okay, this is a high crime and misdemeanor that he committed as president of the United States. And that didn't stop the Republicans in the 1990s on Whitewater for President Clinton, which happened mostly exclusively before he was president of the United States. And they still had investigations on it, and people went to jail over it. Let's not forget that. But right now, I don't see, you know, the connection. I mean, I think Trump's on the defensive. And who knows what he's done as president to cover up any of those things like that. But right now, I don't see this as impeachable.
So do voters automatically jump to seeing this as guilt by association?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are sort of three sections of the voting population right now, right? So the Trump voters who love Trump and literally don't care about this and say, okay, I'm voting for the guy anyway, and you've attacked him, he's under attack. You know, we know that's about 34% generally of the Republican Party, or 35%, and that helps him in his approval ratings. And then there's the Democrats who aren't going to vote for him no matter what. I mean, that ship has way sailed. The big thing for the Republican Party looking at November, to me, is still that circle of Republican, moderate Republicans who are fiscally conservative but socially moderate, who care about things like climate change and right to choose, and independents, who basically don't affiliate with either party and aren't particularly happy with the president. And since Trump has made no progress among that, I mean, we see the approval rating is almost identical to Inauguration Day. He just can't get any traction with people outside his core base. And so if those people decide they want to send a signal to Trump and the GOP that this behavior is unacceptable, then the Republicans really do badly in November. But whether they do feel that strongly and get out the door, I don't think the Republicans know that, and I don't think the Democrats know that. So for now, it's all about the midterms. There is nothing else that matters except for the midterms, particularly if you think Trump might be willing to change his behavior, willing to change his style. The only thing that will matter to him is a signal from the midterms that he could lose in 2020. And we don't have any idea right now that there's going to be a big signal that tells him that he has to switch gears.
These different voter blocks that you just mentioned, that really is what all this comes down to, right? I mean, you've got the, as you say, the 35% of the Republican Party that doesn't care about this. Is there anything that they would care about? How far could this go?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure anything's going to push them off the block, so to speak. You've got people, you know, we don't know, people who have been laid off, people whose plants are closing, particularly in the Rust Belt in the Midwest, who voted for Trump. Now, whether they stay home in November, that's the big concern for the Republican Party in Senate races like Joe Donnelly in Indiana, for example. You have to worry that they may not decide they're against the president, but they're not going to get out the door the way they did in 2016 to support the Republican Party, which they view hasn't done anything for them. And they distinctly separate Trump from the Congressional Republican Party. So whereas Republicans have been running towards Trump in the primaries to win their primaries, you're seeing that in the general election, you know, it's unclear to me that those voters that the Republicans peeled off from Obama and the Obama coalition will actually get out the door to vote for other people other than Trump. I don't see that happening, particularly if a plant's been closed in a particular area and you're looking at the Rust Belt for that problem. So that's where the Republicans, I think, have some serious issues, at least peeling off more Democratic seats in the Senate, for example. And I also look at California. You know, the Republicans in California are dropping like flies. Duncan Hunter was just indicted for campaign finance fraud, yet another Republican who supported Trump who looks criminal. I mean, you know, you pay tax dollars. You pay them to the government, and you think maybe the government's inefficient, but you don't think they're all crooks all the time. But now we've got Chris Collins in New York. We've got Duncan Hunter in California. And independent suburban voters and Republicans and suburban voters, particularly middle to higher income, they want to keep their tax cuts, per se, but they don't want to see money stolen, for example. And I think that's a big challenge for the GOP, and that ultimately will come back to Trump if he doesn't figure out a way to disavow the kind of behavior that's been, people have been convicted in his closest circle. So that, to me, is the longer-term problem and the shorter-term problem for the Republicans.
I hear a contradiction, though. You say unless he figures out a way to separate himself from this, at the same time, we seem to be sort of trapped in this view that there's a certain part of the Republican base that believes they're under assault and nothing is going to change that.
Right, but there's a difference. Trump can continue with his rhetoric, particularly his anti-immigration rhetoric, his trade tariffs, which are starting to affect the economy, particularly in some of the places that I just mentioned, in a negative way. He can do all that and keep his base, but he could throw everybody else under the bus. He could get all of the anybody else who's left in a circle who might be, either from white supremacists to convicted of financial crimes, out the door and just say, I'm cleaning house. Let's not forget again, Bill Clinton cleaned house. He cleaned house pretty substantially in the end of his second year of his presidency. Presidents can do that. And so if he could jettison that, and Mueller doesn't find actual direct ties between Russian money and the Trump campaign for president in 2016, if those two things happen, then Trump can clean house, and then he can continue with his rhetoric and his base, and he can do what Trump does and sort of take himself away from the idea that the GOP is corrupt. That's the biggest new wrinkle in the midterms to me, is that now the GOP can be painted as literally corrupt. And that sits poorly with a lot of the voters that went out the door in 2016. So, is the Republican vote lower than it should be in the 2018 midterms, despite the president's, popularity and being Republican president, you lose seats. But this is bigger. Is there such a disaffection or disillusionment among the people who did get out the door that the Democrats just really do much better than anybody thought? And then the cries for impeachment will be pretty loud in the House, and that becomes a political problem for the Democrats. So I just see all of this coming down to whether Trump can conceivably try to pivot in his personal dealings to try to get, really just separate himself and say nothing that I did as president is impeachable.
Okay, coming up on the clock here, just a couple of seconds left. The president keeps saying, where's the collusion? Is that an effective argument now?
Yes. I mean, people, the Russians helped them. They gave them information. Facebook caused all sorts of problems. The list is endless. But is there any conception, particularly in Trump voter minds, that this guy took money from the Russians and then ran for president and sold out the country? Nobody has made that case. And until they can, I think the vast majority of Americans will not see the direct connection between President Trump and Russian collusion.
Okay.
Put the partisan lens aside, but it's going to be very tough to prove. Very tough proof.
Brown University political science professor Wendy Schiller, thanks very much for your insights this morning. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.